That's what you want to know, is how the Half-Life thing wraps
up? I know they're doing other stuff. I just want to know if I just want to hit other guys with my crowbar. I just haven't gotten enough of it. I go back and I play 1 and 2, hoping it'll add up to 3, but it hasn't. But I've got a good source on the inside that told me that this game is going to be out this time.
Is it Gabe?
Gabe is going to come out and he's going to give it to me.
Me is he going to do that after he juggles all of his knives?
He has a bunch of knives?
Do you not know about this? He's like,
is that a knife thing?
Oh, good.
Oh,
guys,
my gosh.
We found the intro. Chris Plant, tell me all about Gabe Newell's knife collection.
Okay. I mean, I can't say a lot about it, but I can say this. Gabe Newell has a lot of knives. Like, big knives, small knives, knives that are used for, like...
katanas?
Like, I don't know. Like, cutting up, like, deer, I think. I think it's
what
like...
Where's the what is your or what is your source on this information?
I can't reveal Kotaku.com.
His power play when you go to meet with him is he's just skinning a deer on his desk. You go in and Gabe Newell is just skinning a deer. I saw a video yesterday, Barry Pepper filmed in his forge.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's about how Barry Pepper makes a new knife for every role he plays.
Shit, yeah.
Even roles that don't need knives.
Even roles that don't need... when he was in Monster Trucks, he made a knife for that role. That also leads me to believe there is a somewhere out there Dale Earnhardt knife that Barry Pepper made, which would be amazing.
So Half-Life 3, it's coming out for Windows PCs through Steam, and this time they've got a real. You know how each one has a cool gun that does like different stuff. This time the gun just knocks people's clothes off.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so there's a level.
Adults
just,
only?
It's like there's a sexy beach level. And it's
there are
just
like three Vita games that already have this weapon.
I know. Where do you think they got it from?
Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Ross Proctor, and I know the best games of the week.
Oh no.
That was some like throat singing I tried to do.
Yeah.
I've been practicing my throat singing.
Practice more.
Practice harder. This is the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in food, entertainment, internet, social media, viral marketing, and video games. This week, we're going to talk about this month, I suppose. We're going to really focus and drill down on video games, get to the bottom of it. You know, folks, these digital delights have come such a long way since the bleep bloop blorp of Pac-Man and his gang.
I saw a picture of a hockey player's face, and I was like, something's off about it. It was a damn digital image and from a video game. I was starstruck.
Have you seen this? There's a new one in there. Have you seen this? Dragon Lair, they call it. You're a very brave knight, trying to get to the bottom of it, but it looks like a cartoon. I thought I was playing, I only got through about 15 seconds before I died, but I was playing a cartoon.
That's amazing. You were watching the cartoon?
No,
like on
TV? I was playing it.
I want to tell you about this game, Dragon's Lair. I finished it.
Dragon Lair, I believe it's Dragon
no,
Lair.
No, this is mine. Dragon's Lair. It's the sequel.
The sequel?
There are multiple dragons.
This time, idiots.
They share a lair, they fall in love, and I cried. It was a video game that made me cry.
Wait, they share a lair, so it's dragons.
You're missing the point. I cried at a video game.
That's so powerful. They're art now, I guess. They're about.
I guess
art.
They. Well, I don't know. Let's not go wild here.
Crazy.
Art's still the museum stuff, so
it may just be fart.
Let's get right into it's May. We're talking about May 2017. Let's get into our honorable mentions first. Who's got an honorable mention they want to touch on?
I've got one.
Okay.
Really, you guys may know I really like Fire Emblem. It's like slowly become one of my favorite video game franchises of all time. So whenever a new Fire Emblem game comes out, I get very excited, and that used to happen once every decade, and now it's happening once every 3 months. And so I've played through the newest of the Fire Emblems which is Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valentia.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's called. It's on 3DS. And it's not super great.
I would go so far as to say it's maybe a little bad.
It's a little bad. It's not super bad, but it's a little bad.
It's just like you can't do this. Like, you can't do a reboot of like an older game like this in a franchise that has evolved in the way that this franchise has without incorporating some of the good stuff that has been.
It's basically like, okay, let's make a new fangled Mario game with new graphics and all the visuals that you love about Mario, but let's only give him the ability to jump straight up and whack a hammer uncontrollably.
And now it's called Mario.
What?
Now it's called Mario.
Mario. it's they literally picked like all of the mechanics that have since been killed off in Fire Emblem because they weren't as fun as the new mechanics. As an example, the weapon triangle system, which is like known as like a very tactical, fun, engaging way to play, is not in this game at all.
Also, you can't fuck. At least you can't in the part I haven't gotten to the point, and you can't even kiss as far, and maybe you get unlock that ability later.
You can earn a kiss, but it takes a lot of doing. They did add support conversations, but it doesn't result in time babies. So at that point, I don't even know why we're bothering.
So what's the honor in this mention, Russ? I'm failing to see.
I do want to mention, actually, for what it's worth, so the localization of this game is actually quite
good.
The writing, generally I like skip through a lot of the dialogue and story stuff of Fire Emblem games because it's usually kind of garbo, and the overall story of this is not great. It's like kind of generic, but as it progresses on, I really did feel attached to the characters and the way they were written, and they kind of speak like human beings and not like, I'm a soldier of four. I mean, some of them do, but most of them actually do speak like human beings, which I really appreciated. And it's fully voiced, and a lot of the voice work is actually quite good as well. So I think it kind of bodes well for the next, the first Switch Fire Emblem game, which comes out next year. Not counting Warriors, because the fuck that. But I think, gets me very excited for the future of Fire Emblem stuff, so long as we just appreciate that this should never be returned to again, like Weapon Triangle or Die.
Perfect.
That's all.
I don't really have any, because all the games I played are going to be discussed
perfect
today. Justin and I played a bunch of Tap Titans. It was all right, but I'm kind of over it.
Oh, no, I can't. It's more of the progressive tapping games.
No, it's great. I mean, it's really, it's the best one of those, I will say.
It's the best one of those, but after a while, I was just like, okay.
Yeah. I played a pretty good iPhone game called Card Thief. That is the sequel to, if you ever played an excellent game called Card Crawl, which is sort of not solitaire, but sort of a dungeon crawler card game, I guess would be the best way to describe it. This is a stealth card game. In every stage, there's a 3x3 card layout of an area that you're in. And the sort of flow is you're moving, you have one card that represents you, and you're sort of moving from card to card. And I guess the metaphor would be you're picking them up, but really you're interacting with each card, and each one has a stealth cost. So you start off at a 10, and then stronger enemies have a stealth cost to walk over them. So it's, you spend your stealth as you pick up each of the cards. But you can, if it plays with lighting. So there are some cards that provide light to other cards, and that makes enemies harder to pick up, I guess, or
it, like, it increases their cost. And there's also a cool directional mechanic where, if a light comes on, the enemies will look at it. And so if you can collect that card approaching it from the opposite side of where it's looking, you can do it for free. There's some really cool shit. It does a lot with, like, this really, really tiny play space.
Yeah, and the eventual goal is at some point, you have to get through X number of cards to find the card that you use to escape. And you can, you have to pick up a treasure in each stage. And the longer you hold off picking that treasure, the more valuable it is, but also the more difficult it becomes to pick up. And there's cool stuff like there are barrels you can hide in, or if you end your turn on one of those cards, it refills your stealth. You also have gear that you bring into each stage, which can do different things, like there's a noise arrow that can redirect enemies. There's a water arrow that can douse flames from a long way away. So it's really interesting. It's I will say that it's I feel like a base level of competence that I'm having a hard time sort of getting past.
I played a couple games and just couldn't get it. I think it's a really clever game. It's just like, I don't know. I just felt like I couldn't really crack how to do it right.
Yeah, there are some runs that are better and some runs that are worse. And a lot of times I'm not exactly sure why one was better than the other. So I don't know. It's really interesting. If that's your bag, it's worth checking out.
Sneakiness. Plant, did you play anything honorable?
I'm going to talk about something. I'm going to keep it real quick because I know you're going to be like, don't talk about it.
Perfect.
Y'all.
Oh, no. I know what it is.
Nier Automata is the best game of the year.
Jesus Christ.
It is still on there.
I'm just gonna zip through it really quick. So last time we spoke about it, I was like still playing through my first playthrough, but had like seen some spoilers from second and third New Game Plus type of stuff. It is not New Game Plus. It's just like a new game set in the same environment each time you beat it. And each version of the game becomes like a commentary or criticism of the version you just played.
Right.
It is absolutely wild. I am completely smitten by it. It is like the one game I want to think about constantly that I have not felt that way in a long time. And it is the first game that is doing meta without like falling to the same meta story that every game has done until this point, which is like, so you've been shooting people. Well, don't you feel bad?
Yeah.
This is like, I mean, it's literally, well, you shoot people and those are programmed things, but like maybe we're all programmed things. Maybe this doesn't matter, but maybe it does. Let's try looking at this from the complete opposite angle. And now the game is just a shmup.
The shmup shit is tight.
The shmup shit is so tight. And I like this weird thing where you start I don't want to like spoil it because I really want people to play it. I won't spoil it. But I want to say it plays so much with identity and who you think you're playing as and is constantly subverting who you are empathic for. Like, it knows that you instantly feel empathy for whoever you're put in the shoes of.
Sure.
And it plays with that in really, really, really interesting ways. And I know that, like, it starts out and it feels like the, like, very cliche, almost button-mashy, like, combat thing, and it takes a long while to kind of figure out the terrain, like we mentioned last time. But holy cow, does this game reward, like, the more you play. It just gets better and better and better.
I need to stick with it because I think I got maybe a little over halfway through the game, my first playthrough of the game, and I kind of just thought it was just sort of a big and empty character action game where I didn't feel like I was necessarily like mechanically invested in what was going on. Even though I liked the story, it was like I felt no need to like get new stuff and build new parts and buy new weapons because it all felt kind of samey to me. But I should get back into it because that meta storytelling, like that's what I love about the Zero Escape games, and this sounds like that kind of exactly.
Yeah, and it rewards like just trying stupid things, like essentially breaking a store by spending too much causes things that will like completely shift the story or provide like massive amount of backstory that you would not get otherwise. That fills I don't want to say it even like that because like it doesn't do that awful thing where like some video games, especially some Japanese video games, hide like key elements of the story that make it unenjoyable if you don't get them. It's more like it gives you the base level, that first playthrough, and then every step after that, just because you already have the basics, allows for massive amounts of discovery and surprise because it doesn't need to worry about you essentially missing anything.
Okay, so let's
agree right now who's going to talk about Nier Automata next month.
No, I can't. Me. I can't. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. I'll play it, but we're done.
The fishing's good too. So I wanted to real briefly mention The Surge because I played some of that today. It's kind of the very, I guess, pedantic, is that the word? Reductive way of describing is a sci-fi Dark Souls.
But it's not, because they obviously took like a crap ton from Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Right?
What do you mean?
I mean, I've watched a lot of gameplay of it. It's pretty damn close.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely similar. It's cool. There's some interesting stuff going on. I like some of the ways it's evolved is if you see a lot of the enemies are like human or human-shaped enemies wearing exosuits. And if you attack them, you can target certain areas. Once you have them targeted, you can use the right stick to target certain limbs. And if you do enough damage to those limbs before you kill the enemy, then you can cut the arm or leg or head equipment off and use it for your own, which is kind of neat. It's kind of a neat mechanic. There's also cool stuff where if you go, the longer you go without returning to the med bay, which is sort of the bonfire for all intents and purposes, the longer you go without it, you get a multiplier for your the gear you're earning, which is like the stuff you use to level up, the scrap you're earning. So that's kind of neat because it's this cool risk reward of like, I could run back and just deposit this stuff. Oh, you can also bank it. So if you don't want to risk losing a huge chunk of stuff and you don't have enough to use it towards leveling up, you can bank it and it'll be there safe for you. But again, the longer you go without doing that, then the more valuable killing enemies is. So it's a smart risk reward thing. The complaint I would have right now is the environments that I've seen so far. I'm in sort of the second big one, and it's sort of a factory type thing. I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of this industrial setting because of the kind of game it is. And the industrial setting, there's no map, and you don't really have. With Dark Souls, I think the environments are so particular and so distinct.
Yeah, a lot of landmarks.
Yeah, a lot of landmarks. You always sort of know where you're at. Twice now, I have had an issue where I get deep in and I have to try to get back to my scrap after I get killed, and I just can't because I don't. It's hard to find your way around because it lacks those sort of landmarks. And that was kind of frustrating. It has this mechanic where you drop your scrap when you die and you have 3 minutes to get back to it before it disappears. But when you kill enemies, it extends the time you have to get back.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. There's like a lot of smart ideas. And I think I'm going to keep playing it. It's neat. I got really frustrated because of that. Like, just not being able to get back to my body is like, because I can't navigate the environment. It's like, is a bummer. But, again, I'm not super far, so I don't know how pervasive of an issue that is, but it was certainly an issue when I was playing.
I think we should move on and start talking about our games and maybe keep the conversation a little bit tighter so we actually do have a halftime this episode.
Yes. I agree, Griffin. Who wants to start?
Yeah.
We should start with the game that has the longest potential for conversation, and I think that's PUBG, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do PUBG. So my game is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Great title. Just a primo title.
So it is a shooter on a third person. Well, I guess you can switch what person it's in. On PC, it's a Battle Royale game. And you've probably have heard about it or seen video of it or like play it because it's a very, very hot game right now. And it is exactly the type of game I don't dig on. But fuck me, do I love this game so, so very much. So it started out as the designer in the game is a guy named Brandon Green, whose online handle is PlayerUnknown, hence the title. And so it started out as an Arma 2 mod called DayZ Battle Royale. And then DayZ, I guess, branched off to become its own standalone game. And then there was a different sort of DayZ mode called Survivor Games with a Z that was like this type of thing. But anyway, this is its own standalone thing with another development studio called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Let's just call it Battlegrounds. Here's the premise. Every game matches last usually about a half hour or so. You start out with 100 players and you're in a big airplane and you fly over this big island, and the island is, I believe, 5 square miles. It's very big, but I mean, you play enough matches and you will become sort of familiar with the major landmarks on the island, but it's the same island every game. The airplane's trajectory across the island, it just flies in a straight line, is different every time. And so I think that's sort of one of the bigger factors that changes, like no two games are going to be the same.
So when players jump out, like the game, the active area is going to be different every time. So you jump out of the airplane, you skydive down, you can see other players parachuting, and you have to run to buildings and, you know, bunkers and any sort of landmark where there might be gear that you can use to equip yourself. There's stuff like pistols and shotguns and assault rifles and sniper rifles and submachine guns and grenades and body armor and helmets and attachments for all your weapons and grenades and different medicines. There's a bunch of different stuff that you will be searching for. And the better equipped you are, the sort of better chance you're going to have to be to survive. It's, I called it Battle Royale as the genre. And it's very much based on like that movie, the Japanese action horror movie Battle Royale, and I guess to a lesser extent Hunger Games, where every game's going to be different. You don't know what kind of gear you're going to have. You don't know where you're going to be landing. In addition, there is a circle of electricity that after you land, after 5 minutes, that circle will then collapse to a smaller circle, and you have to stay in front of it, because if you're outside the circle, you're constantly taking damage. And the tighter the circle gets, the more damage it does, to the point where, like, once you get down to like the final 10 and the circle's real small, if you get outside of it for 5 seconds, you're dead.
Yeah, I think the circle aspect is probably the reason that it's become so popular. I think it does a lot of things right, but that in particular, by one of the issues that I think people have with games like Arma or even H1Z1 and DayZ and stuff like that, is this nature of like, well, I'm just wandering in the woods for a really long time and out of nowhere someone pops me, but you know, you don't really know when it's going to happen or why or where they were coming from, stuff like that. By forcing people into increasingly smaller circles, it basically forces people to make choices that are not the most tactically smart choices,
right?
But so it encourages people to like fuck shit up.
And the circle, there's a lot of randomness to the game. You might drop into a building and get a fucking tight assault rifle with a 4x scope and extended mag and a silencer, which basically makes you invisible and you can like just hide up in a mountain and take pot shots at people and they'll never find out where you are. That could be in the first house you find and awesome. You could also land in an entire like 6-house complex where you don't find fucking anything and then you're screwed. And similarly, the circle collapses in sort of a random pattern. Like, it doesn't always go in towards the center. If you're in the very center of the circle, you might be outside of the next circle because it hugs closer to one side of the, or I guess one end of the circle than another. So there's a lot of randomness, and which is kind of an equalizer. Like, if there is a sniper who's like fucking elite gamer up in a mountain who's just like fucking shit up, but then the circle moves away from them, and then all of a sudden they have to make this desperate run down the face of the mountain, you might be able to see them. This is a game about like, it's like maybe 30% luck and then like 20% like shooting,
right,
shooting skill, but it's like 50%. Not being seen and knowing where everyone else is. This is a game about like positioning and keeping your position hidden. And so you're constantly making these evaluations of like, oh shit, I see somebody. Do I want to shoot at them? If I shoot at them, there's 30 people left alive. If I kill them, then the other, 28 people are going to know where I am and gonna find me. Like, sometimes it makes sense to be the last one standing after killing the second place finisher and winning that way. Like, sometimes it doesn't make sense to or maybe you do want to kill somebody. They'll drop all their stuff. Do I want to run at where people just saw this puff of red blood explode? And like, are they going to look at that? Are people looking at, oh shit, there's a car nearby. Do I want to go even near that car? Because people are probably looking at this car. Like, you are constantly making these decisions. And the learning curve is treacherous. Like, I've played...
I would say it is and it isn't. Like, I don't think you can win within the first 5 hours of playing, whatever. But I think you can feel... Like, the first time I played, I was able to get a few kills and feel like I accomplished something. And that's a big difference from just, like, mastering the game.
There's
a
lot of, like, granular stuff that takes a long time to master. And even just, like, getting a gun and learning how to shoot somebody takes forever because you're not always going to find a gun and get the drop on somebody in a game. Like, it takes practice to even learn how to shoot because that is not a circumstance that you're going to run into every game. That's why I say the learning curve is very steep. But I've gotten to, like, second place twice now, And every time I break into the top 10, it is, I have not felt that tension playing a video game, maybe in my whole life. It is.
It feels like, I would say the only other time I felt that level of tension was like, I've been doing a fucking Destiny raid for 3 hours and it's finally looking like the boss is going to go down.
Yeah,
and it's last 10
like
seconds
Oryx,
of that.
Oryx like popping up for that final like, DPS him. If we don't DPS him now, then all the work we put in these past couple hours are going to be lost. Like it's a bit like that.
But it's that tension, but you've only been playing a game for 15 minutes. So like that level of tension so frequently is just, it shows it's really great.
Griff, I played a lot less than you. And when I sort of bounced off of this, it was, you and I had sort of the same take. So I'm curious if you can sort of address this issue and tell me how like your view on it has sort of evolved. But the big complaint I had with PUBG, I guess is the accepted nomenclature.
Plunkbat also works.
Okay. the big issue I had was that it seemed like there was a lot of it was kind of neat in the beginning when you were running around like scooping up gear and seeing what you got. That was kind of like Christmas. But then there was like after that it was a huge lull of waiting and waiting for something that usually didn't happen, you know, somebody running up on you. And then towards the end just sort of getting killed the first time you encounter somebody. So it was like a lot of boredom and then a really quick death that really didn't give you the opportunity to get any better at the game. So like what am I sort of missing?
I've enjoyed the game more when I stopped, because you and I used to play together and like my strategy would be like, oh, I found a shotgun. I'm just going to hang out in this house until some asshole comes to this house and I shoot him with a shotgun. And that was an inherently flawed strategy. Like the reason that we weren't enjoying the game is because we weren't really playing it right. So like you hang out in that house and then somebody walks in and you shoot him with a shotgun. All right, you got a kill. It doesn't really fucking matter though. You're not really that much closer to winning. There are ideal circumstances that you can find yourself in, which is a good vantage point with a good gun with a lot of good attachments, preferably like a high range rifle with a good scope and also a close range weapon in case somebody gets up on you, in a position where you are pretty sure you know where everybody is, you got good healing items, you got good armor. And every moment that you spend not pursuing that ideal winning circumstance is a moment that's going to bring you closer to a middle of the pack finish. And that's just all there is to it. So you have to play the game with a more aggressive. I started enjoying the game more when I played it with Jake Lear, who has like 500 hours logged and a bunch of wins.
Jesus Christ.
No, he's very fucking good. And it was interesting to play with him because I was like, all right, I found a cool shotgun. I got a pretty good rifle. Don't have enough healing items. I have like a level 2 police vest. So I'm looking all right. Let's just hang out in this house. He's like, no. You need to find like a 4x scope. We don't know where anybody is. Like part of the game is getting the guns, and that's the easiest thing to figure out. But there are more arcane elements required to win. Or
so you get spells?
You can get magic spells. No, like just knowing what is an ideal like combat scenario. Like up on a mountain face behind a rock. Fairly like camouflaged would be pretty cool with like a high range scope. And if you have a silencer, that opens up more options because all of a sudden you have more like, if you do see somebody down in the distance that maybe isn't going to run at you, fuck it, shoot them. You got a silencer. Nobody's going to know where you are. Like there's a lot of stuff that, is gear based that, it changes how many options you have. So you gotta constantly be in pursuit of those options. Cause otherwise you can just like hang out and have a pretty good setup, but you're still going to finish like 20th place. And like that, you're not going to win anyway. Also, it's more fun to like get out there and try to fucking hunt people down than it is to wait in a building. And then oops, nobody came and the circle closed in and I was too slow to catch up and the circle killed me.
Did any of you read Austin's piece at Waypoint about the scope in this game?
No.
Basically, like, the gist of it, it was a really interesting piece, was, like, it's the best power-up in a long time in a video game, as in, like, power-up in, like, the classic sense, where you, like, find something, and suddenly you're just essentially a god.
Yeah.
Where if you get, like, the top-level scope in this, you can look across the entire map, just pick people off and nobody has a damn clue.
Yeah, so the map is 8 kilometers by 8 kilometers, and that's how it separates it out into like these little squares. And there are videos online of people killing each other from 1 kilometer away with like a powerful enough scope. But here's what's fucking great. as circle gets tight enough, you're not going to need that scope. And the person with the shotgun is probably going to win. Like, the game is fucking constantly changing and you have to stay on top of it. But it is more enjoyable if you are aggressive and just saying, like, I have pretty good gear right now. The only way I'm going to win is if I have the best gear. So I need to keep looking around until I find it, or I need to kill somebody who does. And that I just like that, that playing that way has changed the game for me. And it's why I started doing like much, 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 much better at the game. Still haven't gotten that winner, winner, chicken dinner, but I'm going to fucking keep trying.
The only thing I wanted to add to this is like, obviously there's a ton of mechanics and gameplay stuff to talk about and stuff like that. I think more so than any PC game that I've played in recent memory, it is like a great just hang out and shoot the shit with your friends kind of game.
We do a stream called Awful Squad on Thursdays, and we're all pretty bad, but it's still fucking super fun. This time we played where Simone was our mom, and we couldn't do anything unless she gave us the order, the go-ahead to take the kill shot. It was fucking amazing. It's like a fun... You can do motorcycle stunts. Like, that's the other thing. Like, it is a tactical military simulator, but also you can do motorcycle stunts. And so there's, like, clips of people, like... going up a steep hill, launching over a building, screeching to a halt on the other side, hopping off their bike and like shooting two people as they come out of the building. And it's like, oh, that's so dumb. And I fucking love it. Like, I haven't watched this much like people playing a video game I'm into since Destiny. Like, this is filling that gap for me in a major way.
Totally.
I definitely get frustrated with it sometimes. It's still frustrating to invest a bunch of time and have a good setup and think you're about to like at least place top 10 and then just like, somebody with a sniper rifle who you will never ever in a million lives hope to ever see shoots you to death. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm done playing now. But I've really been enjoying it as I sort of scaled over the learning curve.
Can I add one thing really quick about watching it? Mm-hmm. Like, I think this is in the running for one of my favorite games of the year before I ever played it. And it's just because basically it solves the big problem I have with esports, which is most esports you have to like really know how to play the game to enjoy mm-hmm. them, and even then things happen so quickly and there's so much going on across so many screens that it's kind of impossible to really wrap your head around everything unless, again, like you really invest time. And I think what you can do with Battlegrounds is there are people kind of constructing almost like game presentations of it where everything's slow enough and it's obvious enough because it's a shooter that you can like see an entire game play out and you can see like multiple players doing things all at once without feeling like you're losing your bearings on any one player, which makes it really watchable.
And to you that, also always know that something awesome is going to happen within X, like you see a meter, and once the meter counts down, you know whoever you're watching is going to have to sprint ahead or do something dumb to get out of the circle. So that level of like, I'm going to just keep watching until the next circle shrinks.
Yeah.
Keeps it makes it just yeah, like
that's
very
such
watchable.
A simple language to like follow yeah. as a sport, which is I will, like exciting.
I will say to that point, I really wish, and I get why this isn't in there for like because this is a game about information, and I do enjoy, this would be a pretty easy way to exploit that. I would give anything for like a post death like so either kill cam or like
that
way
would
to
be
spectate
a good fit for me. And
do you like DC? Do you like DC superheroes?
I'm not that
or
picky. You know, I just think you don't really care. I just think superheroes are neat. I don't really pick between the two. So I wanted to check it out. I heard some good stuff. So let me talk about. I'm not somebody who likes to play online a lot, and I'll address that here in a second. But let's talk about the single player offerings because they are extensive and I think they're really cool. There's a story mode. That is actually really well sort of fleshed out. It does a really good job of, it weaves a really interesting story of the overarching thing being Superman starts killing criminals and Batman locks him up in a, you know, a jail that can hold Superman. And then when a threat makes its presence known that only Superman could help us stop, there are groups that feel like that we should let Superman help, and then there are groups that are not so keen on that, and they're sort of all fighting, which is the everyone chooses a side. I will say, though, without the clear delineations between like hero and villain, it gets a little hard to follow. Like, wait a minute, are they Batman's team or Superman's team or whatever?
Is that the idea? It's like a Civil War thing where like two sides, it's like Batman versus Superman.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Basically exactly like that. So there's definitely I would say Batman is portrayed as the good guy, I would think, but there are
insofar as he doesn't approve of killing people.
Yeah, exactly. But they make rational arguments, I think, for both sides of it. And it's interesting. It's a lot more fleshed out than you'd see in a fighting game, certainly. And it's better than a lot of the comic stories I've read, most assuredly. So on the story front, it's really neat. It also cycles you through a lot of different characters, but still letting you get a few matches in with each one, giving you time to check out. It's not all, but a good number of characters. So I enjoyed that.
Is it pretty much just like bot matches for the story?
How do you mean?
Like it's like a Mortal Kombat story. I mean, obviously there's cutscenes and stuff, but outside of that, it just plays out like
yeah. It's just fight the gameplay segments are just comprised of fighting.
Yeah.
There are some segments also that you can choose between two people to play. Sure. So beyond the story, which is of a good length, and really nicely done.
Who wins?
It's up to you. The single players also have access to something called the multiverse, which is when you load up the multiverse, there are a few different planets to choose from. I guess they would each be different Earths, basically, and different realities where there are different conflicts going on, and that's all sort of fancy narrative wrapping around. You have to fight X number of bad people on this world. But in each of the stages, there are certain like criteria you can complete, like don't use any light attacks in here don't, you know, play it with this character for extra bonuses or whatever. To give you an example, right now there's a multiverse event called To End All Wars where you can unlock all of Wonder Woman's outfit from the new movie. So you play through as Wonder Woman and fight a bunch of people and earn her gear. The gear, I should mention, isn't just this aesthetic. The gear actually has bonuses. So you can level up and get and equip better gear. And gear has like level attributes. It has additional like stats. It adds to your strength or your defense stuff like that. So the gear is actually really important, and I think as a single player that is a really big deal, because you know it's not just about like getting better so you can beat people online. You know, you have a reason to keep playing because you're unlocking better gear, and all the gear pieces look different. You know, it's not drastically different. You know, you can some of them are pretty drastic, but you know, by and large you can still tell that's Superman. But there are also shaders that you can use to color them sort of however you want. And that's really cool. It's a really good incentive for single player to keep pushing on. I will say this though, and I'll also let me say that there's a really good tutorial and a really good sort of practice mode where you can just sort of like try out different moves and stuff like that. I will say this though, and it's sort of a realization I had while playing. I was really enjoying it, and I was. Like there were a couple characters where I had learned, I would say, a lot of their moves and some of their combos, and it was not tough for me to beat pretty much any AI opponent. But then I started playing online and I lost every single time.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And this is not an injustice issue. I think that the reason I'm highlighting it here is that, like, it does. It has recognizable characters. It has really cool looking moves. The attacks are not that hard. Like, there are no special attacks that are like super hard to pull off. You know, I can do most of them pretty consistently. But there is a gap. There is this knowledge gap with fighting games where no matter how many times, and I've been down this road quite a few times, like there is this knowledge gap with fighting games that people who have never touched the game are come in equipped with. And no matter what I do, I can't seem to get past that knowledge gap.
The NetherRealm games especially, like the Mortal Kombat, the more recent Mortal Kombat games and Injustice 1, like there's an infinite combo. It feels like I know that's like a dirty word or whatever in fighting games, but like it's all about stringing together these combos where you don't allow your opponent to do anything, which like there's gaps in every fighting game, right? This is a genre specifically about mastery, but it feels like if you're on the wrong side of it on these games, it's like, I just want to be able to punch once. Yeah.
Justin, I have a question about the tutorial, because I'm curious if you had the same experience that I did, which is that before the game started, I was like, man, it'd be great to have a tutorial in this game where I felt like I was confident before I started. And lo and behold, I boot the game, and there it is. And it is great for... Well, I can't say a percentage because I never finished it, because I got to a point where it was like, cool, and you've learned that special move, and now learn how to like do a move cancel into a throw combo.
Yeah,
and
it's
I did it for 20 minutes and I could not pull it off.
It gets weirdly granular in the tutorial, and it's like, whoa, and that is an issue. They definitely, like, I wish there was a way to, I don't know, do that gradually, I guess, because I had the exact same experience where I was like, what, you want me to do what? Like,
did you actually complete it, or did you just, were you just like, I'm never going to use this?
I did finish it. So that was great. So, but not helpful to me, because it was like, I did it once and I was like, well, I'll never need to know how to do that again. And the problem is, the game can teach you the move, but the thing the game can't teach you is, or like, and I know that this is solvable if you have the time to invest in it. I like, if I wanted to buckle down and only play Injustice 2, I don't live a life where like I can do that. But like because I have to play a lot of different games, I can't get to that point. But like, I don't know when is a good time to apply any of those skills, right? Like, just because the buttons I need to press doesn't mean I know like when is the time to do that. And if you look for help online, it's mainly like, here's how you do the moves, here's how you can tie combos together. But like, I'm still in the dark on like what is the way to apply these things that I know.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with these games, and it's you don't see it as much, or really very much at all, in games like Hearthstone, where you have like a very broad player base of people playing online, because like effectively that's all you can do is play online. But for games like this, the percentage of people that are playing online are mostly people that are very intensely interested in fighting games and love sort of so you like, the field of people that you're playing against are these obsessive people. And there's just like no middle ground. It's a 1v1 situation. It's not like you can, in PUBG, you can hide in a corner and get the edge on someone that has like super good gear. Here, you're just, there's nothing you can do.
And it's purely a, like Justin said, a like muscle memory thing. I mean, the moment I realized that I didn't understand fighting games at all, / I would never really enjoy them, was when I was doing that Triforce story, and these guys had their own apartment in New York where they lived and practiced fighting games all day. And I was doing an interview and like interviewing a few of them. And one dude was on a floor mat practicing like a combo set for 3 hours. And towards the end, he was able to like perform it with pseudo regularity. And like watching that, and you know, this dude wasn't some like champion of the field yet, maybe he is now. When I saw that, it was like, oh man, there is, to really, really nail these games, you actually do go into that tutorial mode and you just practice over and over and over. Which, Justin mentioned, go ahead.
If that's your thing, that's cool. It's just like I wish I was good at fighting games. I remember buying a fight stick because I wanted to get really good at Marvel versus Capcom. And even that I think was a little bit too much for me to handle. Maybe I'll take a spin at the new one that's coming out, but that
is not necessarily a complaint with Injustice 2. It is a neat game, and if you're into fighting games, I've heard a lot of glowing stuff about it from people who are more into that. So I want to do halftime because I want to make sure we have time to get to everything real quick. I just want to talk 10 minutes about what you guys are anticipating from E3 this year.
Anticipating or hoping, like, excited to see, hoping to see.
You know,
see.
I, like,
I can do mine real quick. Seaman 2, baby.
I can't believe that.
Seaman 3.
Correct. That, no, you're exactly right, Russ. It would be Seaman 3. There was Seaman 2 in Japan. Never really stateside. So, Seaman. Here he comes.
A bold vision. I like...
You know this is happening, right, Griffin? You know this is
Yeah. I'm very excited. Yeah. What is it coming out on? Is it a platform?
It's only been... my man, you just tweeting about it. But
was this the last thing that Leonard Nimoy did before he died?
Oh.
Like on his deathbed, he recorded Seaman.
Now he did tweet a like
Leonard Nimoy did.
No, you did.
No,
Yu Taito, the creator of Seaman, tweeted a picture of a disc with like all of Leonard Nimoy's
fuck yeah
vocal cuts from it. So like. Oh. Maybe there's enough that's on awesome. There. I don't know.
Here's where I'm at with this. I'm not going to get excited about Seaman 3 until I see a new trailer for Shenmue 3. That's where I'm at in like Pipe Dream Town. We've been prepping for E3 for the past few weeks and like getting appointments and like getting a list of stuff together to see. And I feel like this happens every year. And I could probably go back to like the last Besties where we talked about E3. Or that may have been a while ago. Where like... I don't see that much that has me like psyched out of my mind, but I am just hoping that there is stuff announced during the press conferences and whatnot that does get me psyched. If I'm being honest, like the thing I want the most is Switch games. Cause that's like, I'm very, very excited about the Switch as a platform. And I play it all the time. I play it more than the amount of like new games on it would justify. I've been playing Minecraft on it. I guess that's one I could have mentioned in the honorable mentions just because it's a really good portable version of Minecraft, but I've played Minecraft a lot in other places before, and so I shouldn't be playing it, and I get that. I just want to be playing stuff on my Switch. So like I'm excited to play the Super Mario Odyssey, and I just hope there's more Switch stuff that would get me pretty jazzed. Also the Crew 2, I can't believe actually making, and I maybe this one's going to be really good.
Just to bounce off of what Griffin was saying, my demands for Switch stuff is like so low to get me jazzed. Like all I want is fucking ports of GameCube and Wii U games. Yep. Like bring that shit.
Super Mario Maker on Switch would end my life.
Smash, like the Wii U Smash Brothers that I never really put, I played a tiny bit of just because it was so inconvenient to play on Wii U. There's just like so many fucking games that would work so well and be so great for multiplayer experiences that like that's all I want. Like those Fire Emblem games that were on GameCube that never came to other platforms, like bring all that shit to Switch and make me very happy.
Yeah,
that's all I want.
Also that Animal Crossing mobile game, it's really all Nintendo stuff. I don't know why I don't know how it got this way, but I feel like year in year out, like, and maybe it's just because they're the only ones who usually keep their shit on lock more than everyone else.
It's a big X factor.
I feel like I know more what Microsoft is bringing, and I know more what Sony is bringing. And like, sorry y'all, but a new Uncharted game, I'm like, okay, and a new fucking
God of War. Like, I'm excited about those games.
God of War looks pretty cool. Days Gone doesn't really do much for me. Like,
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man,
you're just not
going
to have like a very revelatory experience.
I cannot wait to see how, without that PS4 power, we cannot tell the story of robots in Detroit.
I can't wait for that.
I'm genuinely excited.
Does anybody know anything? Like, does anybody know what to expect from the Microsoft presser? Is anybody
Here's what I'm
looking at a list to like help supplement this conversation, and I don't see anything.
Crackdown?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Crackdown has to be there, and then that Rare game, that's got to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that kind of looks cute.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they've got to pull out, basically, so they're going to be showing the Scorpio, obviously. That's the big focus for them. And I feel like they need to pull out some sort of like crazy exclusivity deal with the Scorpio.
I don't know what it's gonna take, who is the audience
for that. I don't get it.
Also, they're gonna show off their they have to show off their mixed reality headset, right?
Yeah,
mixed reality slash
what do you think that's ready
VR.
For consumers?
Well, they already have it. You can buy it. It's just not Microsoft branded right now because they built like a platform, and then you can buy different versions.
I think Sony's gonna have God of War and the zombie game that Griffin mentioned. What's that game called?
Days Gone. I can't believe you couldn't remember the name of it.
Branding. I think they're going to have a good lineup, but Sony's actually been really, really good every year.
Yeah,
for the past, like, 3 or 4 years. But again, no, Griffin, you're right. I think, like, Nintendo just launched this console. We all know that consoles begin to mature in their second year. So this is finally us seeing
what they got.
The future of this console.
Yeah.
And so I'm just fucking hyped.
I also really want to play Destiny 2.
If Microsoft rolls out, and I think they're going to have to, the Scorpio and a lot of the specifics there and make that, like, hardware the big push, does Sony have anything to answer that? Do you think Sony will be able to make any sort of hardware
any
announcements
game
there?
Well, like, any new game? Like, I'm not, yeah. The only reason I turn on my Xbox is because it was the platform that, for whatever reason, I bought the Jackbox Party Packs on. That's it. And if it wasn't for that, I swear to God, I would not have touched that thing since fucking Fantasia.
Yeah, I really don't know if anybody cares about 4K. And, like, I think what I worry will happen in terms of just people being very angry on the internet is Microsoft is going to go out there and be like, yo, this is the most powerful machine. It upgrades not just new games, but all games to 4K. And people are going to be like, cool, what else does it do? 4K Blu-rays. And it's like, no, does it make the games better? And they'll be like, no.
I think we're doing a little bit of conflating here, though, between what gamers think about this kind of thing and how analysts or people who maybe are not analysts because this is their job to pay attention, but people who are paying less attention. Like, if you're reading the headlines on CNN, you know, is Sony going to have anything to answer back to Microsoft announces, you know, most powerful console ever?
It's just they're getting so thoroughly dunked on in the first person games department. Like, if any analyst is like, Sony failed this year because they didn't have another then those analysts should be like run out of town on a rail, because that's not how it fucking works. Like, I can't believe how few Forza Horizon 3. I was being unfair. I have played that. That's the most recent one. And that was last. I don't even know when. It's just I don't understand. I don't understand why that is the priority, putting out new, more powerful hardware for all that will play all the games that you haven't been prioritizing.
I think the weird thing for me with all of this with Scorpio is, so the whole idea, right, is to turn Xbox, it seems like, into the App Store. Like, as a brand, Xbox is no longer any given piece of hardware. It's an App Store, and you go and buy games on it, and it works on your, like, console-style computer or your computer-style computer, which is, like, a really great idea, really fantastic. The weird thing, though, that becomes a problem for that is they're going to go on stage, and they're going to say, what they'll want to say is, Project Scorpio is the best place to play new Xbox games, but that's going to be wrong. A new ultra-powered PC is going to be the best place to play those games. Like, you can.
And people that care enough about specs already have that PC.
That's what, like, I'm saying. It's like, they're playing to spec nerds with it, but spec nerds, that option already exists thanks to this big idea they have. So it feels really weird. Like, I just don't know. I really can't tell who it's for, if the play for Xbox is, hey, if you want a better version, play it on PC. Or also, you could spend a good deal of money and play it on this, like, stopgap that is between a normal Xbox and a PC. I mean, I would love for them to have some big surprise that is a twist for this. But if, like, the selling point is, it's like an Xbox, but more expensive and a bit better, but not as good as a high-end PC, that's a weird space to live in.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird situation.
Great. We need to get into our next games. Russ Freshstick, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's hear about it.
Juice. Okay. The game that I'm going to do is called Dead Cells. And that's spelled cells like the, you know, nucleus in your body.
Oh, yeah.
Justin alerted me to this game. It is a game I hadn't heard of until Justin was playing it. I guess you found it on Early Access. How did you sort of stumble upon this game?
Phil sent me a trailer. It was one he wanted to get reviewed, and he asked if that looked interesting. So
there you go.
It that way.
So I picked it up and instantly fell in love with it. Like, instantly, did not take any time at all for me to know that this is a game I was going to dig. very brass, broad strokes, brass tacks description of it. It's a 2D side-scrolling roguelike with Dark Souls elements, with rogue legacy elements. And you're basically like a dude, of like an undead dude who explores randomly generated dungeons. Again, this is 2D side-scrolling. And as you explore, you find items that are either weapons or sub-weapons and stuff like that. And you're getting increasingly more and more powerful. And once you get to the end of a stage, you can choose to spend the cells that you've collected, that's like the resource in the game, to unlock different items and item upgrades that will then populate the world. If you played a game like Binding of Isaac, it kind of works similar to that, in the sense of like, once you unlock something, you don't automatically just like have it in inventory at all times. It's more like it will now populate.
It appears
the world.
In the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
You also like have to find, you also have to find the blueprints and get them to the, for those items in order to unlock them with the cells that you collect.
Right. Yeah. There are certain and so rare blueprints.
There's
stuff.
Like the, a very micro and macro tension. The macro being that like, if you die, your run's over, but in the micro, like, oh shit, this blueprint looks hot. I got to get to the exit of this part of the level so that I can like start spending my cells towards this thing, because it looks awesome.
Yeah, so then you might spec your character just to survive that level, but not really be effective for the rest of the game. So there's kind of like a balance there. The thing that I really like about it is, as I've said, we've seen a few of these side-scrolling Dark Souls games. Another one that was really good was Salt and Sanctuary, which I really liked, and Rogue Legacy, which I mentioned. But in both those situations, neither of them had like what I would call like super ideal control schemes. I would say Salt and Sanctuary was a lot closer. But in both cases, they kind of felt a little hinky. I think Salt and Sanctuary was trying to match the slow thoughtfulness of Dark Souls, and Rogue Legacy was more like a super arcadey, like you feel like very floaty and running around. And Dead Cells feels like the perfect middle ground between those two, where you feel like you have like complete control over the movement and your attacks and your character. But it like still has those like permadeath mechanics baked in. So you still have that tension of moving around, but you're not really fighting against the controls to like survive a battle or something like that.
They're also really great. It's really smart how in every run you find different primary weapons, and those have really different bonuses that have to change the way you play. So like there's a rapier that crits if you do a roll right before you attack. So that makes, that's really fun, because you're like just rolling around and murdering everything in your way. There's a whip that crits if you hit the enemy with the end of it. If you hit him with the middle of the whip, it barely it doesn't do much. But if you hit with the very tip of the whip, it does a critical attack and really brutalizes the enemy. There's one that does a critical right after you get hit. There's one that causes bleeding to the enemy. There's one that's really fun that criticals with every attack if you're below 50% hit points. So it's like, well, this is going to be a pretty scary run, but if I have the, you know, if I know what I'm doing, you know, I can cut through really quickly. There's actually advantages to that if there are doors in a lot of the stages that can only be opened if you get to them within a certain time. So there is also a risk reward with like, how long can I take and still open the doors?
There's also some really cool mechanics with sub-weapons. Generally, like, I don't use sub-weapons a lot. Games like Castlevania and stuff like that, where there's an inventory system and you're just like saving all of your items for the eventual time when you want to unload them all, but you never end up using it. Here, it's all on a cooldown, kind of similar to Diablo, where, you know, every 3 seconds you can use your special abilities. So like, I'm like throwing a turret and a bomb down whenever I like run into an encounter, and that kind of like softens people up. But I'm not feeling like I'm using precious resources, which I really like.
Yeah, the synergy between those are really cool too. Like there's weapons that work, that do like crit damage against enemies who are bleeding. So if you find like a grenade or whatever that has an effect where it leaves enemies bleeding for like 6 seconds, you know you can throw a fucking grenade in a room, and then for 6 seconds, if you just charge the fuck in there, you can have just a little bonanza, as long as you're like quick about it. I have only a couple problems with the game. I've really fucking enjoyed playing it. I think it's a really fun game just to play. Like, the feel of it is really cool, especially if you are lucky enough to get a loadout where you can play with those really fun synergies. I really like ones that are like, throw a firebomb to set them on fire and then throw down a turret that does double damage against enemies who are on fire. Like, that that's really, really fun. My two problems are, like, I think the upgrade system's a little bit bogus in that, like, just like the cost, the economy of the game is kind of weird, where you spend like 20 cells to unlock a new weapon, and then you can spend 30 cells on it to increase its damage by 5%, and it's like, that's not very much, and then that escalates so quickly to the point where, like, you are spending as much to unlock like 15 items as it does to upgrade your weapon damage by like 10%. Like, it's weirdly like unsatisfying.
Yeah, I think they want to encourage people to use variety rather than like spend all their
items. Sure, but I had a point where I felt like I'd unlocked all the worthwhile upgrades because it just wasn't worth it to spend a bunch of cells to very, very minimally increase the damage output of a weapon that I may or may not find on any given run. It's kind of a weird way to approach it. My other problem is that I got to the final boss of the game and it stinks real bad. It's not a very good final boss at all. And it was like, I was a god with my loadout. Like, I had this turret that cleaned shit up, and I had these little biters, they're called, that are just like these little worms that will just like devour anybody. And then I had like all of my gear was synergized. Like, I was doing insane damage to everything, but this boss was just like, it mostly floats up in the air. And so all of my ground based stuff was completely fucking worthless. So I cleaned up until I got to this final boss. And just because the boss was not a ground-based boss, I got destroyed. And it took me, I mean, it's a roguelike, so you lose everything, and that took me like an hour, and I was like, I think I'm done maybe playing Dead Cells a little bit. It is an early access, and I'm hoping that, like, I don't know how they fix that without like just changing what the boss is or whatever, but
I also think some of that is like I felt that way the first time I got to the final boss of Spelunky. And then, like, it took me 45 minutes to get there, and, like, and I'm just talking about Olmec, I'm not even talking about Hell, and I died with, like, an amazing loadout.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, a month later, I was getting to Olmec in 4 minutes, and, you know, so I think it might be that.
Yeah,
as well.
I just felt like I had gotten much better at the game, and I did have, like, the perfect loadout, and I had taken my time and gone through all the levels to get all the money and bought all the upgrades I wanted and had all the skill upgrades, and I was like, this is it. This is when I get to the boss. And I got to the boss, and there was no way that with the ground-based, like, locked-to-the-ground weapons I had that I could have ever defeated it.
The weapons that really can wreck shop leading up to the boss are not necessarily useful when fighting the boss, which is kind of a kind of
it's just a weird design decision, because it's like the other stuff is you pick and choose your strategies based on the loadout you have, and then when you get to this boss fight, the final boss fight of the game, it's like, okay, there's only a few strategies that are going to work, and let me see, you don't have the right stuff, all right, well, you're dead.
FTL had that same issue.
FTL had that problem. I feel like Downwell kind of had that problem, like so it's really annoying. There's another boss fight in the game that you have to do that's not as it's not as, like, punishing in that sense. It's actually a little bit easy, which is kind of... I know that it is easy because it's not difficult in the way that the final boss is, and so it's hard to balance that, but yeah.
It's cool, but, and also worth mentioning, still in early access, so chance that some of these issues could be addressed.
Please come to Switch.
Please come to Switch.
It'd be so fucking amazing.
We gotta get to Prey. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Prey. Plant.
Prey.
Go for it.
So, it's a good game.
It's really good.
it is from Arkane Austin, best known for being, I guess, half the studio responsible for Dishonored. I think they're the
team... home of half this podcast.
What? Oh, yeah. And also, and, I mean, not the studio, just the city. Yeah.
No, but that didn't really make sense.
And also known for writing a sick burn of Ben Katura and Jason Schreier on my coffee shop's chalkboard.
What?
Yeah, when that whole like kerfuffle about
frustum
tulling turn.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's frustrum tulling.
Yeah. Somebody changed that to the word of the day on the coffee shop's chalkboard.
Oh.
Yeah. Dig. Anyway, so basically, here's what it really is. It is the new System Shock. Thief 2 was not Thief 2. Oh my gosh, sorry. Prey 2 was going to be a sequel to this game. that was in development hell forever, and was, it had portals before Portal, but you didn't shoot a portal gun. It was very weird and like pseudo offensive. Made by some of the people responsible for Duke Nukem 3D, I believe. It was affiliated with 3D Realms. And then Tokyo was going to be like, wow, it's a, this semi-open world game in space, and you're basically Han Solo. And then that game got canceled for a whole bunch of like wacky reasons. And then the studio or publisher Bethesda, or ZeniMax, was like, this is so complicated, I'm really sorry. But they were like, hey, we have this name, we have to use it on something. Those people who made Dishonored, they would like to make a new thing that is just System Shock. What if we let them make that and then just called it Prey? And they did. So you, to catch everybody up, you know what? I'm just going to let somebody else describe the basics of this. I'm like stumbling for some reason.
I can do it. I'll go quick. Okay. The basics of it is you are basically on a space station. It's like an open world space station, and in the sense of like a Metroidvania, but it's control wise very similar to BioShock or System Shock if you played that. The mechanics involve a lot of like hacking turrets and using the environment and like kind of coming up with your ways around certain encounters that otherwise seem impossible to beat. It's like a very classic, if you've, you know, if you're familiar with Looking Glass, which is like the old studio that made System Shock as well as Thief and a bunch of other amazing games, Deus Ex, it's that spirit of game design in this game. It made my tummy hurt because I got nauseous.
There are a handful of things that are like special about it. The enemies are largely not humanoid. They're like black goop things. Some of them can be like larger beasts. The ones that you encounter most often are kind of like head crabs from Half-Life, except they can like grow really long limbs and they're really hard to keep track of.
Scary.
You have
especially
a weapon.
You didn't even talk about what they do. They fucking transform
there's a
into
big
objects
aspect to them.
That you don't know if that like coffee mug or trash can or more disturbingly health med kit in front of you is actually an enemy that's going to jump up and scare the shit out of you and hurt you.
So for a chunk of the game, until you can get a power that kind of lessens that, you just go around like whacking the shit out of tons of stuff.
Yeah, if you ever see like two objects next to each
I
other
love
you're
that.
like,
yeah, that's how you start out, is you see two phones on a desk and you're like, don't nobody needs two fucking phones. Smash, 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 smash.
You get a gun to kind of stop these things called the glue gun, which doesn't kill things. It just freezes them in place. But you can also use it to create platforms, which essentially can let you break the game. Speedrunners are having a hell of a time with it. And that's what I really like about the game is I feel like these games were built back in the day, and I think Prey returns to this, with this idea of, hey, we could iron out all the ways for you to break this game and to take advantage of the systems, but it would lose a lot of the fun and we would have to like cut some of the options out. Or we could just let people totally go nuts, and if they think about it or they want to try something really bizarre, they can bust the game entirely and shuttle through it as fast as possible or do all sorts of weird stuff, kind of bending the rules of the game. And that can be using this glue gun to get to places that you don't think you can. Or a thing that I did right away was I couldn't get through a crack and there are these really heavy objects and you can upgrade yourself to move the heavy objects. But instead, I wanted to get through the store that was kind of blocked by a big, I don't know, like filing cabinet or something. So I pushed my body in between this wedge, and then I fired the glue gun at the door as much as I could, and then it shot me through the door.
But what's cool, like in that scenario, like I can think of three other ways you could have done that. There's a power that lets you like turn into objects like the aliens do, and you could like turn yourself into a mug and then roll through a crack. Like that shit is awesome.
You can also, there's three weights for something. There's like weight level 1, weight level 2, weight level 3, and you purchase upgrades and you can move bigger things. But an object of a smaller weight will move an object of the next up weight if you apply force to it. So if you bought upgrade one, you could push like a weight one box into a weight two box into a weight three filing cabinet and use like... the game's weird physics to like push and knock shit over. It's really, it's a game all about like unintended, like means of exploration and like surprise ways of dealing with situations. And that's like Arcane's whole shit. And it does that stuff really, really, really well.
I finished this game. I really did not enjoy this game very much at all.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
There's a few reasons for that. For me, I could definitely, I obviously like can see the appeal, but a few of the issues. One, and this is just sort of the nature of the game. I really didn't enjoy fighting any of the enemies, especially those little things, the little mimics. I just despised sort of like once they were on your on your business, trying to find them and hit them with you had to do that a lot. I really just didn't enjoy it, and I thought that was very unenjoyable. I don't feel like any of the weapons felt particularly good from a shooter perspective, and I know that that's something that people use sometimes to continue tension, build tension, which I get. But the other issue is I played on PS4 soon after it came out. And it's a mess. I mean, it was a mess.
The input drift was like,
okay,
not
that's just for starters.
Good.
Like, there was drift on the input that made me think like something was wrong with my controller. It was so laggy, just like controlling it. There's an audio issue where people talking were basically mixed so far down that you couldn't hear anything that they were saying. And the other sounds and music completely blew it out. The load times, especially later in the game, you start moving around the station a lot. And when you go through a door, we are talking like 45 seconds to over a minute long load times getting from A to B that are miserable and just like completely momentum killing and exploration killing.
And it's not like Skyrim where you could like turn a turkey leg for that 30 seconds
The end of the game, it involves like it's open world, so for the most part, and as long as you have the gear you need to get to where you need to go, you can go there. But the end of the game, especially if you want to play cleanup on some of your subquests, the game and like sort of the last critical path that you go down to finish the game is a lot of backtracking. And I had a point where I was unkillable, basically, and I was extremely super fast. I had unlocked all the run speed upgrades, so I was actually spending more time in the loading screens than I was playing. And that's not an exaggeration. Like, I would spawn in, run at like light speed to the like waypoint that I needed to go, and like I would weigh my like, okay, well, this subquest is four load screens away, and so getting there and coming back here is like, we're talking about, I actually started to like add it up, like that's like almost 10 minutes loading, and like fuck. Is that worth it?
There's a very not particularly like complicated glitch that people use to double their resources infinitely, and basically that would, in a way that completely would break the game. I think that has since been patched out. And also,
don't do that, people. It ruins your purpose.
And then there was just little things that, like, there was one stage where I had to put, I remember this specifically. There was one stage where I had to pick up three turrets and get them to a certain location. There was a lift that I could use to put those turrets up. Every time I put all three turrets on the lift and then ran back up and pushed the button to make the lift go up, the turrets somehow fell through the bottom of the lift and just stayed there at the bottom. So I would lower it back down and go back and pick them up. I eventually had to do them one at a time. So I'd get one turret, push the button, pick up the turret, move it onto the bridge, go back down. And then I get to the door that's supposed to carry the fucking turrets through, and there's a guy that's bugged standing in the door frame. So I had to pick up each one of these turrets and throw them over this idiot's head and damage the turrets. And then I couldn't get past this idiot, so I had to find a banana in the room and transform into a banana and slip between his legs.
I love that. That's so good.
I mean, it's a radical end to that story, but a very bad beginning. It's like a lot of those things have been fixed, but for me, it just really, it killed the momentum of the game, and it killed a lot of the fun. And I found myself with just a much more distant appreciation of it, I think, than anything else.
very quickly, I do want to mention, I put it on PC, and none of the loading issues exist on PC, obviously, because whatever, it loads in like a split second. But the default anti-aliasing settings they put in the game are basically motion blur. So if for whatever reason you, I don't generally get motion sick in games. A few games have done it to me, Mirror's Edge being like the biggest one in recent memory. This game did it to me big time. So definitely deactivate all the anti-aliasing settings in there, because especially for all the zero G shits, which I hated, those levels in zero G are just not fun for me. And it made it even more brutal with the puking on the keyboard.
I really liked the story and atmosphere and the music and shit in the game. I really liked.
I don't think the story stuck it for me.
I liked the ending.
I thought
stuff.
It was okay. It was building to something that I didn't think it really paid off on, but I thought it was.
What did you like about
fine.
The story, Griffin?
I don't know. I just really dug the the general atmosphere of the facility, and I think it handled the idea of. The moral choice that it presented, I thought, was kind of fascinating, and that it wasn't so black and white. And then once you get to sort of the after credits thing, you sort of do see the ramifications of the choices that you made in a way that I thought was really satisfying. I thought it was just really smart. And I also I wish they had done a little bit more with like the Groundhog Day stuff that they teased so hard in those first trailers, because it's sort of only an element that gets you into the game, and then it doesn't really happen again. But yeah, I dug all that again. I also do want to say the sound design in the game was fucking great. Like, I know, Justin, you didn't like the mimics, but, like, the sound that they made and the sounds that clued you in, like, you better be careful. Something in this room's fake. Like,
oh, God, I hear teeth clicking.
I know.
Creepy.
I this is, like, a classic dumb annoying thing to say about a video game, but I am so excited for the sequel to this, which I hope either actually
ever happens.
I hope it does, because I feel like the games that they take on, and this is the same with Dishonored, are so complex that just figuring out how to make the top-level game work is very tough. And if you look at the difference between Dishonored 1 and Dishonored 2, with the wild things they were able to pull off with their grasp of that design, the stuff that I think they could do with the basics that they already have in place for Prey are super duper exciting, and I think they've done that hard work, so I hope that they actually get the chance to do a sequel.
Also, I think that could be imported to another IP, though. Like, I don't think it necessarily...
Well, how tragic would that be, though, if they just keep
It'd
making...
It'd be a bummer, but...
I mean, what, you know, the IP is meaningless, so, like...
Right.
I also, real quick, because I was talking about the story and you asked what I liked about it, I think it did the best job of... like audio tapes. What's the industry term for the like the recordings that you find of all of the crew who are, with very very few exceptions, all dead before the game even starts. Like the game does some really 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 good character development stuff through those tapes, and I usually don't fuck with that. Like those have been exasperating for me. I feel like since like BioShock Infinite, where I would see one and I'd be like, ugh, who fucking cares what this per-? Like, okay, there's so many of these, and like, I'm not invested with these people who I'm not going to meet, so okay. But in this game it was, and they did some good character work, and then like I think I said on Twitter, like, it's great because you get to love these characters and learn all of their eccentricities by listening to these tapes, and then like an hour later you will find them dead on a toilet somewhere. which was like a little ham-fisted and a bit self-defeating, but bittersweet in a way that I thought was neat.
So which of these games is the best game of the month?
Okay, so I'll vote now. I think PUBG is my favorite of the month. I don't actually know if it came out this month.
I think it went into early access in March, but
we're gonna count it.
Yeah, I don't care. This was the month where I feel like it really kind of popped off, and
I think that game sets a new, like, in the way that Call of Duty 4 sort of reinvented how multiplayer shooters are played. I think people like EA are going to be copying the mechanics of this game for the next 5 to 10 years. No question.
Well, I would have said Dead Cells, but it sounds like
I love Dead Cells. I think it's a really great week. Like, I really, apart from Injustice, which I didn't play, like, all three games I liked, I think PUBG is like, has the potential to be game of the year for me.
Excellent. Well, congratulations, PUBG. And let me say that next month is gonna be rough.
Gonna be rough in June, guys. I don't really know how this show is gonna be in June because it's gonna be.
Mean?
June is rough.
Well, we've got ARMS.
Okay, that's one.
Ever Oasis, RPG Maker FES for 3DS, couple good 3DS games.
Yeah.
There's gotta be that Crash Bandicoot.
Oh,
he's back.
God, yeah, it's gonna be dry.
It's gonna be rough.
We'll manage.
It's gonna be rough. We're gonna have to figure something out. Until that time comes, maybe we'll find something good on mobile. You know,
sometimes there's a really good game coming out.
What's that?
The new Valkyria Chronicles sequel is coming out.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like kind of excited about that.
Yeah.
Is it still like World War One era stuff?
I think it's different.
Is it fantasy bullshit?
I don't know. Look.
I think it might be fantasy bullshit.
I think it might be good. I hope.
Crystals and shit.
Are you talking
crystals?
Valkyrie Drive? Mermaid?
No, Valkyria Revolution.
Yeah.
Valkyria Revolution. Okay. That's not on the Giant Bomb page, so I don't know what to tell you. But maybe that'll come out. I don't know.
I'm looking at the exact same list on a little website called polygon.com.
Not familiar with it. We do those? Man, I gotta check that out. Anyway, that's gonna do it for us this week, folks. Be sure just to join us again next month for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best game?
Bestie. Oh, wait, did we talk about whether this game's better than Zelda or not?
Oh, no, we didn't. Okay, we're back. It's not. Zelda's better.
Until next time.
Besties.